You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Growing local teachers and cultivating educational leadership, visit lanlfoundation.org for more information. The Radio Cafe and the Santa Fe New Mexican thank the Lanl Foundation for their support. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Patrice Muchnick. She is with an organization called Heart of the Gila, which has made a documentary called Hearts on the Gila, which screens at the CCA in Santa Fe on Saturday the 4th of May at 7:30 in the evening. It's also screening on Thursday the 2nd of May at the Guild Cinema in Albuquerque at 7 o'clock, and then on Friday, May 3rd at 7 o'clock at the Harwood Museum of Art in Taos. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So this is a documentary about a tragic event, the death of three teenagers who were advocates for the Gila River and the Gila Wilderness and the whole ecosystem and wilderness land in southwestern New Mexico. And one of these teenagers was your daughter, Ella. I thought maybe we could start by you telling us about her and how she became so deeply connected to the river.
Thank you. That's a great place to start. My daughter's name is Ella Jazz Kirk. She was born in New Hampshire, and we came to New Mexico when she was about 3.5 years old. We settled in Silver City, and almost immediately we sought out the wet and wild places. That's exactly where she grew up. She grew up on a river, literally learned to walk in the sand on the banks of the Saco River, New Hampshire. So she was naturally inclined to love water, and we both loved water and loved nature. She was born that way, in all honesty, and we began to visit the Gila forest and the Gila River, fell in love with it. We owned a home up in Gila Hot Springs at the headwaters, and Ella spent a lot of time on the river. She very quickly developed a sense of duty and responsibility for the river, and she joined some local groups that were doing conservation work in the Gila. The first group she joined was the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance and then the Gila Conservation Coalition, and she would do activist work. Early on, it was writing poetry about the river, acting in puppet shows and being part of parades that celebrated the river. As she got to be a little older, 8 or 9, she began to do workshops on tracking and learning how to monitor species that we were concerned about on the river, such as beavers and otters. And then towards the end of her life, when she was 12, she began to get involved with the AWSA settlement agreement about putting a diversion on the Gila, and she became a vocal advocate against the diversion.
It's sort of shocking to hear a mother say toward the end of her life when she was 12 years old, but it was her and her two friends. I mean, she died at 14 along with her two friends, Ella Myers and Michael Mall. All of them were students at the Aldo Leopold Charter School. And Aldo Leopold, as many of our listeners may know, was a famous conservationist here in New Mexico. He established the Gila Wilderness long before the Wilderness Act was even passed. And it seems like those three kids were really following in Leopold's footsteps. Do you feel like, or did they talk about being inspired by his example?
Well, I know that they learned much about his work at the school, and they read his works and his literature. And so I know that they did follow those guidelines and that inspiration at school. But I honestly, I really think that their dedication was, they had both a sense of love and of duty. And I imagine that's how he felt. They loved this place. As children and as teens, and they just loved the places they went, but they also had this sense of duty to do good works and to be good students and to take good data and to be responsible for documenting. They were sort of serious about their work. So they were serious academics in some way. They were on a mission.
They were going up in a plane to survey the ecological effects of a fire, the Signal Fire in 2014, when the plane crashed. And I think it was you, there's in the film Hearts on the Gila, there are the three mothers, and I think it was you who said, when a child dies, your life stops. And then at a certain point, you and the other two mothers decided to do something to somehow move forward and honor the kids' lives and their legacy. So you went on a river trip. How did this idea come to you, and what happened next?
Well, the three moms became close after our children died. We weren't as close friends as we became. And it actually, the way it evolved was we had the filmmaker involved in documenting the lives of our children and documenting how the children died. And that project came to an end. And we realized that we wanted to elevate the story of our children's lives to do something positive for the Gila. So we asked the filmmaker to move forward with something that was more living, a living expression of their work so that they could affect others. And so we began to work on this project collaboratively. We would get up, we would go together into the forest. David would film us in the woods, in the places that our children loved. He filmed us in our homes, looking at our children's interests. And he started to really investigate this full range of who our children were. And as we started to think about how to tell the story, David realized, David Garcia, the filmmaker, that we couldn't really tell the story through our children's eyes. It was just going to be too difficult to resurrect them, that we could tell the story of who they were and how they lived, but the journey had to go forward with us. And so that's how the idea evolved for us, the moms, to take that journey together down the full length of the wilderness section of the Gila River, to do the trip that our children didn't get to make, to go to the places that they loved, the Gila River, and to take that journey, that full journey, and to bring them with us. And so that's how that idea evolved, that we had to take that journey with our children.
And that trip is documented in the film, and people who see the film can kind of get a sense of what it was like. But tell us right now, what was it like to go down the river together, these three mothers, thinking about, talking about, and also having kind of private inward experiences of your children?
The other two moms, they're both named Jennifer, by the way, which is interesting because both our daughters, you know, are named Ella.
Right.
They expressed very well in the film some of the emotions of taking this trip together. And they actually do it a little better than I do, I think. I had a real caretaker feeling. I had been down the river before, but never with the two moms. And so I really felt this urge to shepherd them down. But in all honesty, they shepherded me as well. And we honestly just had so much fun being together. It's so much fun to be together and to feel our children with us as we go. And we get a sense that when we're together, that our children sort of gather around us. So it generates more energy and excitement about what our children did and what they might be thinking and how they might still be feeling about what we're accomplishing together. So I know that may sound a little strange to listeners, and I shouldn't necessarily be talking for the other moms, but we feel our children with us. And when we're together, it gives us a chance to talk to each other about our children being with us. And we're like all sharing the journey together. It's not always joyous because we're sad about, you know, we feel pain about our children's deaths, but we feel pain together and we feel jubilation about their together about how much joy they brought into the world, if that makes sense. Our children were so joyous that we feel that joy. So it's interesting that way we experience the joy that our children experienced.
When you say you feel your children's presence with you, what does that look like? What does that feel like?
For me, Well, again, and we express some of this in the, you know, in the film. For me, I feel a light and happy energy around me. And I also, at that time, I feel like a melancholy. You know, when you know how that sense that you're remembering somebody, and when you remember them, you almost get a physical feeling of remembering. And that physical feeling we often think about as, I don't even know if we do think about that physical feeling. We have it, though. So I get a physical feeling of melancholy, but I also get almost like a feeling of love coming to me. And when you're in nature, oftentimes and you're in nature and you're taking deep breaths and you're looking around, you kind of feel this energy anyway, right? You feel this oneness or glimpses of oneness, right, with nature. And then I feel Ella sort of with me in that moment.
The film starts with a little video log that your daughter Ella did, and it's kind of spooky. She says in this little video log something along the lines of, well, I'm doing this little bit of filming so that when I die, people will know about me. Not that I'm going to die soon, but I might die soon. Something along those lines. I mean, it's such a strange thing for a young person to say.
Yes, you know, we've thought about that as parents. And all our children had an urgency to them. And some children have an urgency. And some people have urgency. They feel like they have to get things done. They have to accomplish things, and they're in a hurry. So yes, Ella had a lot of that urgency to her, and she had a lot of seemingly premonition type phrases and songs. She wrote music, which is in the film. And so it is a challenging thing for me as a mom to see those things. I don't know what else to say. I think that all teenagers kind of have that relationship with their death and their life, that existential void. But Ella did seem to have a sense of that you had to do things now because you didn't know how long you had. So that was a constant in her life. It didn't keep her from relaxing, you know. She could relax and just do nothing, but she also did have a sense of urgency. So yes, she does tell the world that through this video, and I think that's why the filmmaker just felt compelled to put this in. It's kind of a funny video, though, right? She's very dramatic, and
yeah,
it's kind of a humorous thing. I mean, I obviously struggle with it, but that was her journey.
Hearts on the Gila is the name of the film, and the nonprofit organization that you founded is Heart of the Gila. You were inspired by the work of the young people. Tell us about the work that you're doing in this organization, Heart of the Gila.
Well, I set up the organization originally. Money really poured in as a response to Ella's death, and in sort of a lieu in flowers. And she was working with the Gila Conservation Coalition, and the director, who she worked with closely, she had just spoken at the state legislature just a few months before she died about the river Ella had. And so her co-conspirators or co-activists, we set up a fund to keep the Gila free. Just keep the Gila free. That's all we did. And we began to get money in through that. I really didn't think that I was going to stay long on the planet and do much with it. I thought I would give the money away pretty quickly to other young people working on conservation. But lo and behold, you get up each day and there you are. So Ella died in 2014. And in 2015, we began a habitat restoration project in honor of all three children, promoting the butterflies and beautiful things. And we planted lots of flowers and restored some riverine places. And then slowly we organized and incorporated the organization as Heart of the Gila to steward public lands and to advocate for wild places. And so that's what I do. Advocating for the Gila River and for other wild places, and also stewarding public land. So we work on in the Gila National Forest on doing service and trails and cleanup and biological monitoring, and trying to develop a mechanism for young people to come on the forest and do science. And so in support of the Wild and Scenic campaign to designate the Gila River as wild and scenic, I got into a partnership with both the Center for Biological Diversity and New Mexico Wild, who is supporting that campaign, to try to bring the film forward as a way to promote wild and scenic designation for the river. So we do lots of stewardship things, but this project is particularly about the river and getting the message through us, through the film, through our children, to keep the Gila wild and free forever.
Wild and scenic designation, is that a federal designation?
It is. Wild and scenic designation overrides, well, it doesn't override, but it can supersede all other designations. So you can have a wild and scenic designation for a river that is on Forest Service land, on Bureau of Land Management land, or parkland. So it's an overreaching designation, and management plans are made specific for each river. So for the Gila, the plan is quite broad, and really it's a magnificent proposal because it proposes to encompass the entire Gila watershed, so over 400 miles of actual riparian landscape to be incorporated into this idea of a wild and scenic Gila River.
What is the status of that right now? I mean, is it under consideration by our elected officials in Washington?
Not formally, and that's why it's still in the hands of us in the public. So we're hoping, we're trying to be confident. We've been working with Senator Udall on introducing a bill. So the first step is introducing the Wild and Scenic Bill. The proposal has been formulated. It's been submitted to the senator. He has to go through his process of looking at that. We've generated tons of local support across the state from businesses, from different organizations, nonprofits, and also chambers of commerce to try to push the idea to our senators that this is a great idea for New Mexico. So that's the status of it now, where the administration that we have, it's not been the most ideal for introducing that kind of legislation, but we do see that wilderness legislation has been passed. And it turns out that these things take, you know, a long time. So 2 to 3 years, 3 to 4 years of organizing is not unusual. And then getting the legislation introduced, that takes another push, and then it goes through committees, and then it gets onto the floor of the Senate. So it can take a while, and we're in the middle of that. But we're hoping that the many different efforts that people are doing can propel this bigger idea.
There's some very striking footage in the film of your daughter speaking before the New Mexico legislature. And there she is, 14 years old, very sort of remarkably confident and speaking not only on behalf of the Gila River and the Gila Wilderness, but also really making the point that these kids are the future and the decisions that adults make today affect the lives of kids who are going to outlive those very decision makers.
Right.
I mean, mostly. But now that these three young people are gone, and the other two children were also amazing, amazing, wonderful young people, Ella Myers and Michael Mull, is the fact of their passing, I mean, is that something that people like our senators are recognizing as part of the big picture in wilderness restoration and wilderness designation and wild and scenic and things like that?
We hope that our communities and our politicians are always thinking about making decisions for both the future and in honor of those who came before us. You know, it's sort of if we see everything we do is about this moment, I mean, we want to act in the moment, but we should be thinking about our children when we make those decisions. And it's interesting to be talking about children who have died and propel people to act on their behalf, because really we know that it's not about our children, it's about your children. Like that is our message. It's, we're doing this in honor of our children, but it's for the benefit of yours, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I think that resonates with people. when we went to see Senator Udall, he spoke. It was pretty neat to be there in Washington and get on film with him. And it was pretty exciting for us to take that distance, to go all the way from the Gila and then to go to Washington. You realize like how hard it is to take the message of this gorgeous place and bring it to these streets. You know, when you try to generate that beauty in a place that's so far from it, it's challenging.
Yeah.
But because a senator had been into the Gila and he grew up going to the Gila and his father was so engaged in wilderness, he could relate to the story of our children by relating to the story of his father who had died and who was also committed to those places. So I think that the folks who are making decisions, you know, we can tell our story and try to motivate them to reach into themselves and to do things in honor of their own ancestors and their own grandchildren, because that is the story. You know, we're generating our story so that it touches yours.
There's endless talk in the media about how young people today are addicted to their devices and they're not connected to the real world, the non-virtual world. Your kids, these three young people, show us a picture of incredible authenticity and passion and intelligence and practicality and and vision. And it made me kind of hopeful that maybe these kids are characteristic of their generation. What's your perspective on that?
Okay, I have a little bit of a cry in my, you describe our children so well. And I suppose that hope is also what makes it so sad to lose them, right? I think that's why their deaths had such an impact on our community in Silver City, because they did represent all those things and then the loss of those things. So if I just may say that in, yes, I stay in contact with a lot of Ella and Michael's friends. And so in my world, in our world, in our little corner of Southwest New Mexico, I see examples of children who, and young people who, in my world, they actually tell me, you know, that Ella's work inspired them, Ella and Michael's world inspired them. And that they've become better people, and they're thinking about what impacts that they can make and how they can move in the world. So I see examples of it just around me. And I think, honestly, the global youth climate strike is impressive. And when I hear young people speak, the Parkland students, I support them. I believe in the youth as being the answer to, not the answer, but they have to be marching. They have to be active. So I think every generation has activists and has people of purpose. And I hope that there are more among us of all ages.
Life is never the same. It can never be the same after the death of a child. And yet you and your family and the families around you have tried to turn this real tragedy into something useful. How are your families doing? Have you been able to find some peace?
Well, I certainly, we've recalibrated our lives and we have lives. This club is not small. There are millions of mothers whose children have died. And as when you have a child that died, you realize how big this club is. You know, how if you're in a restaurant, three of those tables out of the 30 tables in there, their children have died. And when you talk about your experiences, you'll have someone come up to you and say, my child has also died. So we're not in a small club. We're all around you in some ways. It's interesting. But it's kind of an unspoken, you know, it's an unspoken club. It's not a club that that speaks out that much. So we all learn to live with these tragedies and grief. I guess the three of us has it as well. I am not the same person I was. I would rather live with Ella than without her. I struggle every day. Actually, I actually every day I think about Ella, and but thinking about her also helps me do the things that I want to do on behalf of her. So there's always pain, but there's always the hope of the joy of Ella. So I also want to live in the way that she would live. And I think that's true probably for many, many, many parents.
And just to say a few things about the other two young people, Ella Myers was a photographer and a writer and a very talented creative person, as was your daughter, Michael Mall, also an environmentalist and very much of a leader. He had just been voted president of the student body, which he never got to live out. And all three of these young people, real inspirations to not only the kids, but the adults around them. And now in this movie, Hearts on the Gila, you can see a little bit about their lives, as well as the whole story of the wilderness and the story of the families.
In the film, Jennifer Myers talks about the three children and what they were together. And we actually, they had a saying for themselves because they were this perfect trio. And as you describe, Ella Myers was an incredibly deep thinker. She had already written two books by the time she was 16. She was a photographer. She could draw and paint. She was an experienced rider, a horseback rider. But she was so deep, they called her the soul. And Michael Mall had this quality to him that no matter who was around him, they felt good about themselves. It was an amazing quality. He himself was remarkably handsome and amiable and intelligent, but he made others feel good about themselves. And he was called the heart. And Ella Jazz, despite she wasn't really an extrovert, she had this ability to articulate what was important. And they called her the voice. And so together they said, and this was something Ella Myers said to her mom, that they had decided that together they made the perfect trio, a heart, a soul, and a voice.
And it seemed from the film that there was some kind of romance developing between your daughter and Michael.
Apparently, but I think there had also been a romance with Michael and the other Ella, so I don't know. they also called them Michael and Ella squared.
Right.
And we had an expression that M plus E squared is love times infinity.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was something that their classmates made up right as soon as they died. And they would make this inscription on their arms and write it and etch it and make, and some of them made tattoos that was M plus E squared is love times infinity. So I try to think about that.
Patrice Muchnick, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation moves public education in bold new directions through grants, programs, and advocacy. Supporting social and emotional needs of students and teachers, visit lanlffoundation.org for more information. And many thanks to the Lanlff Foundation for supporting the Radio Cafe. You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.